Well, I've always been a morning person. I've always loved the mornings. Loved to get a cup of coffee and sit outside, and love to watch the world come awake. And I always the first one up in my house by a long shot, and I've loved the quietness of the morning to think and read, to pray. And I especially love Bible study in the morning because my mind is fresh and it's empty and ready to be filled up. And so I've looked forward to this morning most of all. I'm glad that you've come to share with us in this effort this weekend. You know, when somebody passes away, I've learned that it takes the next year to get all the sting out, because they're constant reminders that you didn't even think of. And I lost my great comrade and fellow worker and mentor of 25 years, and I was reminded he used to call me after every Astros playoff victory. And we would share that. We were both too upset to talk after they lost. But I would keep my, as I was watching the post game, I would just keep my phone right there and wait for D to call. And I miss that. So you're helping me this morning to remember why we're doing what we're doing. I want to read from 1 Corinthians 16, one verse that will set the stage for what we're going to do this morning. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. I'd like for someone to read for us verse 13. Who has that? 1 Corinthians 16, 13. Craig, go ahead, please. Okay. Now, does anyone have a version that on the third phrase, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, Craig's was act like men, be strong. Anyone have anything other than act like men? Yes, sir.
Be brave.
Be brave. Okay. Are you using New King James? Is that right? Okay. Someone else have another? All right. Also translated, be courageous. King James, quit ye like men, which kind of sounds like the opposite, doesn't it? But that's just the old English of acquit yourselves like men. So the Greek actually does use the form of the word for male or man, which is why so many versions translate that act like men, stand like men, play the part of a man, show yourselves to be men. And I actually got a text from Jonathan Banning, you remember Jonathan, a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me, and I looked it up to verify it, some of the newer versions are taking that verbiage out, even though it's in the Greek, but they are just translating it as have courage. And so here we have another example of God's word being changed or adapted to fit this culture of gender doesn't matter. We don't want to offend somebody. We don't want someone to think that we're placing one over the other. And so what I want you to remember is God tells us and expects us to act like men. That gives us a responsibility. Now, in this context, he's talking about all soldiers in the Lord's army. But a similar thing is, you may even have a cross-reference to 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 9. This is when the Israelites bring the ark into their battle with the Philistines, and the Philistine army becomes frightened at the presence of the ark, and they think it's like a god has come into battle. And so they're told, "Take courage and be men, O Philistines, be men and fight." Well, when we read that phrase, "act like men," especially in this setting, we understand what Paul is saying. The question I want to begin with is, what would people in the world think when they read "act like men"? How do men in the world act? What things would come to your mind for a person on the outside, "act like men"? How would a man in the world act? Somebody start us. All right, somebody who's in control. He's bossy, is what Randy said, or he's full of his authority and not afraid to flaunt that. Good. Yes, sir.
Stepping over fear.
Okay, so be brave, not be afraid, not letting fear overcome you. What's the standard of success in the world for men? Yes, yeah. All right, so it would have to be or be connected with your wealth. Act like a man. You've got to accumulate goods from this world. Is that a hand back here? Okay, so someone who's proud, got an ego that's puffed up. Good. What else? How else might a man in the world think he ought to act to be successful?
I know a lot of people associate males with, you know, the logical side, you know, not emotional, you know, just decisive.
All right, so logical, decisive is what he said. I'm repeating the answer just in case everybody can't hear them. And I don't know, maybe that helps the live stream too. It does for us back home. Just so everybody can be a part. All right. Yes, sir. Oh, okay. You're helping a brother out. Where? Oh, yes, sir.
He's building on what Jeremy said, sometimes impatient.
Okay. So a man might not be one who's patient, used to getting things done quickly or the way he wants and doesn't really tolerate those or lagging behind.
Independent, in control of his life.
Okay, yeah, so doesn't really need anybody. You know, he's able to do it himself. He's independent. Again, with that control.
Sometimes men speak too quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you?
Too bad there's not a verse about that. Craig said speaking quickly, so letting your emotions control your speech instead of being thoughtful. Good. Brent? Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. So never showing your emotion. I'm a lover of presidents. I love to read about the presidents. I love presidential history. And I learned that Ronald Reagan, before he would give a speech, that he was concerned he might have trouble with his emotion, maybe at a funeral or a bombing somewhere where he had to talk about Marines who'd been killed or anything like that. He would practice it out loud so many times that he became desensitized to the words, so that when he gave the speech for real, it was just like he was reading off a cue card or reading the teleprompter, and had removed his emotions, because presidents don't cry. They don't want to be shown or appear as weak to not only their nation but to the world. So for some, act like men means you got to be stoic and not show any emotion. Good. Yes, sir.
Do you
Self-absorbed, all right. So kind of insular, always just thinking about your needs or what you want, and doesn't matter who you have to hurt or step over to get that done. Good. There was another hand right in here, I thought. Okay, yes. All right. So again, our brother said being direct and not worrying about how it might be perceived or hurting someone's feelings. You're in charge, and this got to be done. So I'm going to say it this way, whether it hurts you or not. Good. I'm thinking of a big one that. You know, people, men of the world, are just expected to be this way. I think so, yeah. Having to do with your sexual nature. Not only somebody who might look down on women, but treat women and think about women a certain way. Tell them I'll call them back. And, you know, women, like business, are to be conquered. And they're there to satisfy my purposes. And when I act like a man, that's just what men are supposed to be. There's some who are raised to think that. So I want you to see that when we read "act like men," we see that differently than people of the world. That's how men are thought to act like. What I want us to do is to go to work now and figure out, what does God mean when He says act like men? How are we expected to behave as men of God? Remember, we're after this, as Stephen prayed, this quality of becoming mighty in the Scriptures. What a wonderful thing to be said about Apollos. So many things that would qualify him to be great in the world, but he was mighty in the Scriptures. So how will the Scriptures help us to act like men? There are some challenges that we face because of our age, of where we are. And so when we read things like flee youthful, what am I working, a police headquarters here? What's going on? Phones are ringing. All right. Flee youthful lust. That might be peculiar to a certain age group. But act like men, these are challenges we're going to face just because we're men. And so how do the Scriptures teach us to act? So what I've done is I've taken several things where by themselves they are things that God permits us to do, but we take them to the excess. And so we've got to be careful as we act like men. All right, so the first one, if you're going to act like a man, be sure that your anger does not become rage. Now, we understand that there is such a thing as righteous indignation. There is righteous anger. Well, how do we know that? Well, Ephesians 4 says in verse 26, be angry and what? Sin not. So be angry and do not sin. Keep control of your anger. All right, so what are things that we have a right to be angry about? Who wants to start us?
Culture that we're in, not doing what God wants.
Okay.
And we can be angry at sin and its manifestations.
All right, so Ken says just the culture that we're in, and I like the way he phrased that, we're angry for God's sake, that God's word is not being upheld, or God's standards are not being followed. And so that can cause an anger that then motivates us to act. Good. Someone else? What do you have a right to be angry about? Yes, sir. Okay, right, and that's where we get it from. We know God is a jealous God, and He has a right to be jealous over a people that He has purchased, or a people He has sent His Son to die for. He wants us and tolerates no rivals, no other gods, but He has a right to be angry. And so when we're doing that, we're imitating God. We're angry about the things that God is angry about. But the problem is when this righteous anger spills and boils over into sin. I want to read a passage in Proverbs chapter 25. And Solomon, as he so often does in this great book of poetry, paints a beautiful scene that is at the same time frightening. Proverbs 25 and verse 28. Like a city that is broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. All right, so there are a few ways I think we can take this verse as to what Solomon is describing. Let me read it again, and then I want to get some of your ideas. Like a city that is broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. What do you think Solomon is saying there? What picture is he describing for us to see of a man whose anger has become rage? What do you see? Yes, sir. All right, so the walls then are the boundaries. So he's, again, gone beyond this righteous anger, or what we have a right to. He's broken through the walls. Good, I think that's one way to look at it.
At the same time, he set himself up to be vulnerable.
Set himself up to be?
To be attacked.
Oh, okay, all right. So now he's, without the walls, he's got no defense, so he set himself up to be attacked. Good, I like that. All right, so Brent gives his approval to this comment. All right, good. What else do you think?
Disgrace.
Okay, so somebody who's, you know, you kind of lose respect once you see that. What else do you think? Like a city without walls. All right, yeah, I think we're on to something there. He said exposed. It's kind of like, I remember in a meeting once, one of the deacons took a day off and said, let's go play golf. And so we were on the front nine, and, you know, I'd flubbed a shot. And he said, okay, he said, now we're going to see how does the preacher respond to a bad golf shot. And when Solomon says, like a city without walls, I think one of the ways we can look at that is that this man is showing who he really is. You're seeing deep inside his soul to who he is as a person when you see how he responds with anger, rage. He has no control. And he's showing that. Yes, sir.
Not only can you not sin against the worldview that's outside, but you let the world view inside. thinking now is all twisted up.
Okay, good. Yeah, he said you're showing on the inside, and now your own thinking is on display, because again, those walls are broken down. Yes, sir. All right, very good. So chaos ensues. Everything that now is affected because we've allowed our anger to boil over. Even Chuck Norris says men are like steel. When they lose their temper, they lose their worth. So we need to be careful about that as men. Again, we have a right to be angry, to have righteous indignation. But what wrath is this anger boiling over and going out of the boundaries to become rage. And then we're in attack mode. And then we're in a situation where we're losing our influence and losing our respect because people can see into the depth of our soul. Craig mentioned James chapter 1, verse 19. This you know, my beloved brethren, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So act like men. Be in control. Don't lose your temper, especially on those to whom you have the most influence in your home and in the Lord's church. All right, so let's move to a second one. Act like men. If we're going to be mighty in the Scriptures, then we cannot allow our passion to become perversion. Passion becomes perversion. I'm talking about our attraction to the opposite sex. Now, certainly as God made man in the beginning, male and female, made mankind male and female, as we talked last night, and that the two should become one flesh, so we need to understand that God has given this sexual relationship as that which is honorable and holy and right within the confines of the marriage relationship. And we need to be certain we teach that. You know, there are a lot of Christian, young Christian couples who have to get over in the early part of their marriage that sex is okay. We're not doing anything wrong. This is something God's given us. And we need to make certain that people understand that. I think of Jacob in Genesis 29, verse 21. You remember that he was given 7 years to work for Rachel. He loved Rachel, and Laban said, work for me for 7 years and she'll be yours. Look at verse 20 of Genesis 29. Who can read verses 20 and 21? Who's got that for us? All right, thank you. So 7 years, and it said it seemed like a day. And you preach on that, and all the women go, ah, and all the men go, oh, give me a break. But that's how much he loved her. And he loved her that much that after the 7 years, notice he says to her father, okay, time's up, give me my wife that I may have relations with her. The New American Standard is pretty graphic, that I may go into her. But what does that imply? That for 7 years, knowing we're going to get married, 7 years we're waiting, what does it imply that for 7 years did not happen? He did not have relations with her. Why? Because he was in control of his passion. He didn't want to dishonor her, didn't want to dishonor God. And so he made certain that those were fulfilled in their lawful setting. And so we have a sexual passion. We have a God-given attraction to the opposite sex. And when you act like men in the world, go satisfy that. But when you act like men of God who are mighty in the Scriptures, we're going to be certain that this passion does not become a perversion, where sex now becomes something that is immoral, that is unholy, that is not what God has intended. As fathers who are raising daughters, we need to make certain that our daughters understand the way men think and the way men are visually motivated. We need to make certain that they know that wearing something like that, here's the train you're going to set into motion. And it's not going to take very long for those thoughts to go where they shouldn't go. As fathers of sons, we need to make certain that they understand the importance of being in control and not going down a road where your thoughts are quickly taken away from. When I was, I guess, probably 10 or 11 years old, for one year for Christmas, my dad got me a pellet rifle. And there on Christmas morning, he took me out into the pastures. He was going to show me how to load it and how to pump it and how to fire it. And so we were putting pellets in it for the first time. And he said, now you want to point it to the ground while you're loading it and pumping it up. And I said, why do you do that, Dad? He said, well, in that case, if it goes off accidentally, he said, you'll shoot the devil. And so, I was paying attention. I didn't want to do it wrong. Well, can you imagine if we would have as much care teaching our young boys about the importance of their body, a vessel unto God, a vessel created for honor, that you have to take care of it, that you have to use it properly, or it's going to cause problems. You know, we need to make certain that they understand there's no good thing. There's no good thing that comes from pornography. What good does that do to plant those images in your mind? Images that you can recall. I mean, what purpose does that serve? What good does it do to watch things or to expose yourself to things that you can't act on and you can't do anything with those and they don't help you? Why would we do that? And we need to understand that all that is a form of covetousness. It's coveting something you have no right to have. It's wanting something God has said you don't have a right to that. And so our responsibility as men who are trying to act like men is to be certain that we're doing what we ought, and that we're teaching that to our children. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. I think a beautiful passage about relationships in the church. Remember 1 Timothy we learned last night was how to behave in the house of God. Verse 1, do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters in all purity. Now that verse helped me. You know why? I have three sisters. Three sisters in the flesh. No brothers. I'm the youngest of four, as you know. And when we were all living in the house growing up, somebody said, tell me about your family. I would say, I have three sisters and no bathrooms, because they were always in. They were always getting ready. I couldn't get in there if I wanted. But that helped me to think of sisters in the congregation like they were my sisters. Why? Because I wouldn't want anybody thinking something about my sisters. I wouldn't want anybody treating my sisters the way that sometimes my mind was tempted to think. And so that's why Paul said, you treat them as sisters in all purity. You think of them as your sisters, and you'll act like men. And I must say that that was then trumped years later when I had a little girl. And then it's, I wouldn't want anybody thinking about my daughter the way I might be tempted to think about another man's daughter. All right, so make certain your passion, which is God-given, He gave that to you. It's right. Make certain it doesn't become a perversion in this sexually charged culture. All right, anybody have something you want to say about that? Yes, sir. Okay, all right.
To avoid filthiness.
Quality of cleanliness, did you say? I like that. All right, so things that will avoid filth. That's a lot. Is there a hand here? Yes, Scott.
I think part of the problem is it creates unreal expectations. The images, whatever, you talk about pornography. Takes away from the inside that we're supposed to be looking for, the godliness, and focusing on surface, which is artificial, basically. And we miss the point of the relationship.
Okay, that's a great comment right there. Has a couple of things that I think need to be said. First, he said pornography, and this does become a problem of those who viewed pornography and then end up getting married later in life. He said it creates unrealistic expectations about the sexual relationship. It creates these fantasies that we see being displayed on the screen and in our mind. And then when we get married and it's not exactly like that, we're disappointed, or we wonder, did I marry the wrong person? You know, it's damaging far into the future, and we need to think about that and teach that. And the second thing he said is that it causes us to focus on the wrong things about who we're going to marry. How's she going to help me become a man of God, become mighty in the Scriptures? How's she going to be my helpmeet to get through this life, to get to heaven instead of just focusing on the physical. That's a great comment. There was another hand. Yes, sir.
Have you seen that product, Microband?
Microband?
So they advertise that they're better than Lysol. Lysol is spot treat, but if something comes in contact with it again, more than likely those bacteria things will be reintroduced. But Microband is something different. They advertise that it will not only spray and kill, but it'll prevent future infection. You establish something. What are we doing as far as microbanning our spiritual life?
Okay.
Look at that purity or cleanliness. Are we just spot treating or are we actually establishing something there to resist further infection?
Very good. All right. Is it something that is a short-term fix or are we killing the problem at its source? I think I'll preach that next Sunday. All right. What else we got? Okay. Very good. So act like men. Again, we're battling this culture, and the man of God is going to show his strength, not only that he's in control of his emotions, his temper, but he's in control of his sexual urges as well. All right, let's go to the next one. All right, we're going to, may not get to all of them, but we'll do the best we can. I don't want to inhibit your participation. All right, so act like men. If we're going to be mighty in the scriptures, we got to understand what God says about this issue too. Going to resist the temptation of our provision to become preoccupation. So we're commanded by God to be providers. And we know 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, if a man does not provide for his family, he is worse than what? An unbeliever, an infidel. Somebody who's not even a follower and a believer of God. He's worse than that. Why? Because remember, that's part of our purpose that God gave us in the beginning to keep and to cultivate the garden. That was Adam's responsibility. And he's given us a responsibility of headship, of spiritual leadership, which we'll talk about a little later. And we are to provide. And so that means we're going to work. We're going to work with our hands. We're going to earn money so that our family can have food and shelter, and so that their needs are met. They have clothing, and we have that responsibility. And that can be stressful at times. You think of during the COVID pandemic when so many things were shutting down, and people weren't allowed to go to work. Now, some could still work from home and never missed a beat. But a lot of people suffered during that time. And the weight that was carried was, you know, what's going to happen to my family? How am I going to provide for my family? So that's a serious responsibility. But the problem is this provision then becomes a problem when our mind is preoccupied by wealth, when it's all we can think about, when all our decisions are based on money, that we neglect the greater part. All right, so let me ask this question. What are some things other than money or other than physical provision that we are to provide for our family? We are providers. But what besides working to provide the necessities of life? What are we to provide?
An example.
All right, to be an example to a leader. We want them to follow us, and so it needs to be not just what we say, but what we do. Good.
Spiritual growth.
All right, so the spiritual growth. Think about it. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. But do what?
Bring them up
in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, instruction of God, all right? So we're to provide spiritual instruction. Good. What else? What do we provide for our families? Yes, sir?
Well, kind of a combination that we prepare them for life.
Okay.
Teaching them, I guess, values, the priorities that they then apply to their families and their lives.
All right, good. Because there's coming a day, just like the scriptures say, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. And then the process starts over there. And so we're preparing the next generation. Now, would you want your children to have the same home life that you have right now? Would that be something that would be good for your children or for your grandchildren to imitate how you've led your family? All right, so we got to think about, that means that they're going to be, to provide these things that you've talked about, they're going to have to be some sacrifices that are made with regard to our work. You know, we want to be home when the kids are there and at night. We want to be there with our wives when the house is quiet. We want to make certain that we're at events that are important to our kids, because we're showing that's important to us too. I have a theory. Now, it's not been scientifically proven, but I have a theory about grandparents, and maybe those who are grandparents can confirm or deny this theory. But my theory about grandparents is a reason that they are so diligent to be involved and to be a part of the lives of their grandkids is because they've realized, oh, that's what's most important. Now that my kids are gone and that those opportunities have gone, I'm not going to let this one get by. I'm going to hold on to these before me because I want to do it right this time. That's not to say that every grandparent thinks that he didn't do it right with his kids, but their values are different now. They see these things as things they wish they had done better. So when we act like men, be careful that our responsibility to provide doesn't become a mindset where all we think about, preoccupied with, is wealth. Yes, sir?
I was going to say experience is valuable. We learn from our mistakes, but we also learn what did work. And so hopefully we've got some knowledge that, you know, we didn't have when the kids were 2 years old.
Okay. All right. So Ken says you do learn through experience, not only in things that didn't work, but things that were successful. And then you just try to replicate those. Good. Yes, brother. Okay, good. So love is expressed in the things that we choose to do. And as he said, it is love for them that we're providing, but it's also love for us spending time and being there when we need to be there. Yes.
Back to the original point of preparing the next generation. You go back to the old Harry Chapin song, Cats in the Cradle. And the dad was always working hard, providing, traveling, working hard, providing. Never had time for the son. when the dad got old, he wanted to spend time with the son. The son was working, providing his family, didn't have time for duty. Maybe someday I will, Dad. Maybe someday.
Mm.
So he learned from his dad.
Is that on Country Classics? I'm not familiar with that.
You probably find it. It's a good one.
Very good. Yeah, so the cycle. Was there a hand? Yes, sir.
Understand these friends are going to be beneficial, but these friends aren't. I know you really want to start dating when you're in junior high, but that's not a good idea. You know, things like that, and connecting that experience and that love, and you're communicating to them that I care enough about you that I'm not going to let you make these mistakes.
Okay, good. So setting boundaries, that's part of a provider, and that goes to what Ken said. We have knowledge and experience that our children don't have. We're going to call on them to trust us, same way a sheep does to the shepherd, and same way we do to our Father. He says things to us, and we may not always understand, but we're going to trust Him because He knows what's best. Yes, sir?
Our children and grandchildren are the future of our church, too.
Yes. All right, so not only for the home's sake, but there goes the church too. So we need to make certain we're providing for those in the church. Very good. Statistics show that there are three main causes of divorce in our country in the first 7 years of marriage. These three things cause more divorces in the U.S. than any other. First is problems with the sexual relationship. The second is disagreements about how to raise the kids. And the third is disagreements about how to spend the money. And so, it's not my money or my money, now it's our money. What are we going to do with it? Well, I want to submit to you that the time you and your wife won't disagree about how to spend the money is when you decide we're going to be servants. We're going to give it away. We're going to help other people. We've been blessed, and so we want to be a blessing. And that's going to show your kids we're not consumed by money in this house. We need it, and we're going to work for it, and it helps us get what we need to survive and to live a comfortable life. But we're also going to share that with those who need it more than we do. So let's act like men and not store up treasures on the earth, but for God. All right, let's do one more. Act like men. Be careful that your hobbies don't become your habits. Your hobbies become your habits. Now, we all understand the need for leisure time. I want to look at a passage in Mark's Gospel, the 6th chapter. Something that Jesus said, this was after he had sent out the apostles to go and preach the first time. Sometimes we call this the limited commission, because he said just go to the house of Israel, where the great commission at the end is go into all the world. So he sent them out, and they're coming back, and they're ready to report everything that's happened. And verse 30, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while, for there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So Jesus understood the importance of downtime, of having time where you're at leisure. And again, as men who are providers and leaders, and we have those who we're responsible for, there are times where we just have to get away. Again, reading about the presidents, just about every one of them early on would spend the weekends at Camp David. They would just get out of Washington, D.C., go leave Thursday night and come back on Sunday night. Still had the responsibilities there, but didn't have all the people around them. So the importance of having things like this, having hobbies, even things that you and your wife do separately. You know, you need to have things like that. And the reason I say that is because we had a widower tell me a few years ago at Southside. He said, you know, we did everything together, and now that she's gone, he said, I just don't have anything that's just mine. And so there needs to be things that are like that. But the problem is, again, when these hobbies, and just plug in whatever you like to do, where that becomes all the time. Everything is consumed on this one hobby. And what we do is we lose opportunities that don't come back. The American Indians, had a wonderful way to describe the word opportunity. And they said it was like a woman with long flowing hair from the front. And she's in a canoe and she's floating downstream. And you see her coming and she gets to where you are and then she passes you. And now you're seeing her from behind and all the hair is gone and her head is shaved in the back. And so their point was, you better grab it while it's in front of you. Because once it gets by you, there's nothing to grab. It's gone. And that's the way it is with our time and opportunity. I tell you what, I didn't grow up, I'm old enough where having video games and computers and everybody having their own computer, we didn't have that till long after I was out of college. And so I didn't grow up playing video games and Call of Duty and whatever they play now, Fortnite. I don't understand any of that. But what I'm tired of is hearing young wives say, that's all my husband does, play video games. Your hobbies become your habits. It's all you do. We need to make certain we're spending time, quality time, communicating with our wives. Not just talking down to them, but talking to them. When the game's off and when we're not online, we're giving them our full attention. There are going to be times where that's gone. We can't have it back. Need to be certain that we're spending time with our kids while they're at home. I have a senior this year, and Melissa and I were talking about the other day. We just have a short window left before he's gone. And so got to make certain that our hobbies don't become our habits. Don't leave your raising your children to your wife. That's not her job. Fathers, bring up your children. That's your responsibility. Your wife is your helpmeet in that. Don't let your wife be the bad guy who's always doing the discipline. And you get to be the hero who comes home from work and she's been having to deal with it, and you get to be the one that says, oh, let's go get ice cream. Oh, yeah, Dad will bail us out. All because we're too wrapped up in other things but our family. Act like men. Has there ever been a time where in God's kingdom we need to show ourselves to be men? Not men of the world, but men who are mighty in the scriptures, who want to act like the men of God. All right, we're going to take a short break. If this were the Southside Lectures, I would say, let's stand at ease for a few minutes.